Cue the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, Shoot the Defence. I'm actually starting to get used to this whole Zoom thing because I know when to do the introduction. I press record, I wait 2 seconds and boom, it's time to record. Nothing like Skype and that kind of nonsense. I'm your host, Del. I've got Rodri Giggs here and little Andy, a very pleased little Andy. But let's talk about Rod first. How are you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah?
Yeah, still here, I guess. Been a couple of weeks since we did a podcast, hasn't it? So, yeah.
Last time we haven't done for a bit. Well, it's international break, isn't it? So yeah, it feels longer.
Yeah, it feels like an eternity, but
them we haven't 2 week much. Break. Them 2 week breaks are fucking killing out.
Let's talk about that a bit, right? Fuck it. Andy, you alright, mate?
Hey Stel, how are you, mate?
Yeah.
All good.
I like that Jordan cap, man.
Well, you could tell I watched the Netflix program. I ended up becoming a Jordan wanker. I bought Jordan boots, Jordan hat, Jordan t-shirts. I've always been a big fan. Do you like it though still, yeah?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Nice.
I still think that the peak could be a little bit more curved, a little bit arched.
It's my camera, man. The peak's all right. It's the way my camera is. I actually look at it. I look really funny. It looks like I'm wearing a top hat. It does, doesn't it? It looks like we're in a top hat. I think I need to sit back a bit. That's it. Yeah, but all good still, mate. All good. As Rod said there, I'm happy that absolute crap international break is over. What an absolute nightmare that was for Liverpool as well, that international break, man. Honestly, it was just horrible, man. It was horrible. So, but I'm glad it's over. So 4 months now till the next one, isn't it?
Yeah, March. So, March.
Yeah. So that's good news, at least. So,
I don't know, man.
I suppose
whenever it comes to international break, I keep saying this whenever we resume, it's like, oh my god, this again. And I look on social media, and I was like, oh, what a game! Jack Grealish is. I'm thinking, Jack Grealish, you mean to tell me that it only took you until now to realize that Jack Grealish was a decent player? Fuck's sake, an England friendly to realize that Jack Grealish is a decent player.
It's crazy, and you know what else I just found mental now as well, especially in this current climate of the season being congested, and you know they're actually playing 3 games in a fucking week, mate. Internationals.
Yeah.
I can't believe it, man. 3 games in a week, man. They're taking the absolute mick, you know. Really are, man. I just can't believe, you know, what's going on. How they haven't scrapped these internationals, man, is a joke. And this UEFA Nations League stuff as well. I mean, come on, man. It's just glorified friendlies, mate. Do you know what I mean? But someone's going to have a pop at me. Some Scottish fan is going to have a pop at me anyway. I'm sure.
I don't think so, man. Don't worry about it. I don't think the Scots listen to this pod. I don't think the Scots listen to this pod. We've got a Welshman here, mate. They ain't going to listen to it.
I just can't get my head around 3 international friendlies, man, in a week. You know, after what these teams are having to go through. Do you know what I mean? With the Premier League season, yep. The cups, the Champions League,
and the pandemic. And
it's just mad, mate. Absolute madness, man. Absolute madness.
Rod,
is what it is.
Rod just disappeared and turned into a dog. Oh, there he is. Who's that? Who's your co-partner there, mate? Who's your partner
I've got,
in crime?
Come here. I've got a new puppy about 6-7 weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
What you got, Rod? What dog is it, Rod?
I've got a beagle.
Ah, hunting dog.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a
Rod and his dog.
It's proper hyper. It's just nibbling, just chewing on everything.
He's a pup.
I've had to literally hide all my shoes. Everything's gone.
What's his name?
The kid's named it. It's a Caesar.
Caesar? Like Julius Caesar?
Yeah.
I like it.
Does he know his name yet? Does he respond to anything?
Yeah.
Caesar, roll over.
Just chewing on a bone at the minute, so I'll leave. He's happy with that.
we'll go back to Caesar in a minute, shall we? we need to do Caesar watch update every few minutes.
Yeah, he's chewing on the bone. Like most dogs, I'm chewing on the bone. He's happy.
I love this show already. I love it. Andy, let's talk about Liverpool, man. Let's talk about your team. You, quite a few injuries going into this one. No Van Dijk, Salah's got COVID, Henderson, who else? Trent Alexander-Arnold, Gomez.
Yeah.
And it's just business as usual for you. Like, everyone's saying, oh, Liverpool going to suffer with these injuries? Not really.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, Stel, pre-match, I was very worried about this one. I thought, especially the way Leicester have been away from home this year, they've done really well, haven't they? They've beaten teams like City away and stuff like that. But I just felt, I just thought the team were outstanding today. I thought it was a mixture of us playing really well, Leicester not really on their game. I think, if I'm being honest, if Leicester fans are listening to this, I think Brendan Rodgers bottled it a little bit. I think he could have gone for us, especially with our pace at the back. Fabinho and Matip are not exactly blessed with pace. James Milner at right back, and when you saw their starting lineup, you're thinking, wow, they're going to proper go for us today. They went out with, Harvey Barnes, Jamie Vardy, you're thinking they're really going to come at us. But listen, I'd like to give us a lot of credit today. I think we stopped them passes going into their front men. And I just want to give props to Klopp, man. He was quite brave in midfield today. He played Naby Keita and Curtis Jones. I thought Curtis Jones was really, really good today. Held the ball really well. It's, for an 18-year-old, it's quite an amazing thing to come into a Liverpool midfield and control a game like that. And also, quickly just mentioning Jota again. No Salah today. Usually last year when we didn't have one of the front three playing, we didn't function the same, but Jota's just slotted in so well, hasn't he, into that front three, man. He's just, I think it's his seventh league goal in six games today. So, yeah, all in all, still, I'm really, really pleased with that result, because especially with players, we know there are going to be some players coming back. Thiago, we haven't even seen Thiago yet, man. We're all excited about Thiago. He's back next week. Ox is back in training. Henderson should be back. Trent as well. So, I'm a little bit worried about the centre-back partnership still, because I still think teams are gonna come for us in that department. But I still think we're one of the most dangerous sides in the league, man, when we attack. So, it's a good result today, mate. Very good result. Very pleased.
as you should be. Mate, you mentioned Curtis Jones playing centre-mid. James Milner played that right-back. What do you think the thought process behind that was?
I just think he wanted. Curtis Jones is very, very good in holding the ball. Good ball possession. He's got good vision as well. And I just felt with James Milner at right back, he brought him on against Man City when Trent went off injured, and I think he did really, really well there. But with Milner, as you know, Stel, come on, the guy is just an absolutely amazing professional footballer, man. You play him in any position, he's just going to do a job for you. And I just think today, the thought process of it is just having that experience in that back four alongside Matip. And, Fabinho's not really a centre-half, is he? So I just felt having that experience in that back four to organise our line, someone like James Milner is very important for that. And I just felt that's what he did today. I was pretty surprised, like you, to be honest. I thought he probably would have gone with Neco Williams. Rod knows about Neco. I think he's a really good young player. I thought he would have gone with Neco Williams at right back and Milner in midfield just to give us that stability. But that's why I wanted to give Klopp a lot of credit today, because once again he didn't care about the injuries. Just thought, we've got to play our game and we've got to put players in their right positions to allow us to do that.
Yeah, it's like they say, the best form of defence is attack, isn't it? That's what Liverpool seem to be doing since you've been getting all these injuries defensively. But, Rod, a lot of people have been highly critical of Roberto Firmino for God knows how long. And, you know, we've even said this on the show. He offers so much to Liverpool. He came off the bench tonight, scored the goal. Was he on the bench? He was on the bench, Andy?
No, he started.
He started, sorry. He started. My apologies. Yeah. I don't know why I thought he was on the bench, but...
He was excellent today.
So yeah, again, Rod, this guy, he brings so much to Liverpool, yet he continually gets criticised for whatever reason. I know people say, oh, he doesn't get enough goals. But again, you've got this weird kind of mentality where it's like, well, every striker has to get you a certain amount of goals. It's what he does when he's not scoring that's important, right?
Yes, I think it would be more of an issue if they weren't winning and they weren't winning so many games, but they've just won the league and they are winning a few games. And like you said, he does so much work off the ball. Yeah, it would be in an ideal world. You'd want him to score more goals, but, you know, you're winning, so it doesn't really matter. And Jota coming in is probably giving an extra kick up the bum. He's probably saying, well, I need to add more goals to my game now, so that's giving... probably healthy competition for Liverpool, which is only good for the team. So, yeah, I don't see it a problem. To be honest, I don't see it a problem. If they're losing or they're not getting points or not getting results, then, yeah, you question it. But they're winning and they're champions. So, yeah, it's a non-starter for me.
Yeah, there you go. So, Rod, do you still think Van Dijk's injury is going to cost them this season?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, the game now, they're probably... been well prepared for it, even though they've been at this international break. You know, Klopp's probably prepared for it, even though the injuries and the players that they've not had. But I think they'll miss him when, you know, when the games come thick and fast, like over Christmas period, when they need that experience and that quality. You know, because he's a guy that plays every week. So, you know, when them games come, will the same back four be as solid? That's when I'll question it, but, you know, with teams like Leicester, that, you know, they're kind of going to come out, they're not going to kind of defend, and they're going to kind of be attacking as well, so it's going to leave spaces. So I expected Liverpool to win, even though I expected Leicester to do better than they did. I still expected Liverpool to win, but to answer your question, I think it'd be more difficult for them when there's more games in a tight period.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Let's quickly talk about Spurs beating City, because Tottenham went top. In fact, they're still top on goal difference. I think their goal difference is 7 better than Liverpool's. And I, for one, wasn't surprised that Spurs got that victory against City. We know that City have been laboured, they've been sluggish, they've had a lot of injuries, circumstances all over the place relating to Man City. And regardless of Guardiola bringing in, you know, Ruben Diaz, it didn't make a lick of difference. Rod, Spurs were absolutely immense, weren't they? And they talk about it being a Mourinho masterclass, but I just think that he identified City's weaknesses and just went for the throat, which is what you'd expect, really, no?
Yes, but you've got to look at the quality Tottenham have got. You know, Harry Kane dropping in them pockets, tore them to pieces, and they were just a different team. So I think Fernandinho gives them a lot more than Rodri does. And I don't think, Harry Kane would get that much space. But to answer your question, that, you know, they just didn't look, even though City had a lot of possession, they didn't really create a lot of chances. And Tottenham looked dangerous with Son, Kane. So, yeah, and they have Bale sat on the bench. So, yeah, Tottenham are looking really good this year. You know, the midfielders are like him. What's his name?
Højbjerg.
No, yeah, I like him. He's solid. Dombele, yeah. But they complement each other. You know, once he gets fully fit and he's playing 90 minutes, he seems to come off at like 60, 65 minutes every game. So he's obviously not fully fit. He looks knackered when he comes off, to be fair. But yeah, I just think, you know, we didn't look that good when he was with us. And, you know, he's only been there a year. And watching that documentary and watching them now, you know, they look like a real force with that Mourinho. It's a typical Mourinho performance, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, but the thing is, Rod, like, I know you mentioned, you know, you said about Mourinho was at United for God knows how long, a couple of seasons and whatnot, and it Spurs looked like a completely different team to United. And I completely agree with you, man. This Tottenham team looks more of a Mourinho team than it was at United. And the main reason why I believe this is I think he's got free reign to do whatever he wants. You know, he drops Dele Alli. No one makes a fuss out of it. He makes these big decisions and there isn't a shitstorm. But, you know, he put Paul Pogba on the bench. He stripped him of the captaincy or the vice captaincy.
Tottenham, Manchester United. I agree.
But if put this way, if he didn't have that fanfare and the circus that went around him at United, I think we'd be in a similar position to what Spurs are, don't you think? Do you think that's a factor?
Yes and no. Yes, if he got the players he wanted, but you've got a, you know, we didn't have a Harry Kane. Harry Kane was playing in a number 10. He was playing number 10 yesterday. He was just absolutely brilliant, sliding balls down the side, you know, setting up assists for his teammates. And, you know, we know how good the goal scorer is. So when you've got him doing that and he's scoring goals and you've got Son and you've got bench and you've got that Mourinho-style solid player that they've got, you know, it's something to worry about if you're an opposition fan, especially with, like I say, with Bale on the bench because, they're looking strong.
That's right. And Andy, staying on the subject of Spurs, when Mourinho took over last season, he had a lot of injuries and, you know, I'll be the first one to say I thought he was a busted flush given Spurs' form back in the last season. I'll hold my hands up again. He's turned them around massively. And I think the biggest improvement he's made is the mentality, the cohesion. And it's almost as if they're able to grind out victories, which is something that we've never seen Spurs do before. Even under Pochettino, they weren't winning ugly. You know, they won a few games every now and again, you know, as I said, winning ugly. But, you know, we saw Burnley, we saw West Brom. We see Spurs grinding out these victories. But also, like yesterday, they're playing with style panache. And again, I don't mean to jump the gun here. And obviously, Liverpool being the champions and everything and riding high at the moment, because of Spurs' depth at the moment, because of their fortune with injuries, with suspensions, they haven't had what Liverpool had. Surely they're more title contenders, no? Or title favourites over Liverpool? Would you agree with is that fair? Is that going too far?
I think it's a little bit far fetched with Spurs. So don't get me wrong. I think they've done well. They've done really well. Yesterday they did exactly what they did last year to Man City. They don't forget they beat Man City 2-0 as well last year. I agree with you quickly on Man City. They just lost their punch in front of goal, haven't they? It's just such boring sideways football, man. It really is. And they're not brilliant at the back anymore. So it was quite easy for Spurs to defend the way they did, get Harry Kane in that little gap, in that little pocket there. And when you've got pace up top, you can use Son. Although the goals they scored, just say, were pathetic from Edison, if I'm being honest. What is he doing? You know, the first goal, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. You know, and this is a guy that people tell me he's better than Alisson. I'm sorry, but he's nowhere near the same class as Alisson as a goalkeeper. He makes mistakes like that all the time, Edison. But as for Spurs, still, like you said, that's the biggest difference is they're winning in ugly ways now. They're winning in Mourinho fashion. Like last week against West Bromwich Albion, I watched that game. They were absolutely dreadful in that match. One cross into the box, they get a 1-0 win in the 89th minute. The week before against Brighton, I don't know if you watched that game.
Brighton
actually played them off the park, mate. They played them off the park, but again, they got that win, you know, and that's the difference. The mentality's definitely changed at Tottenham, you know, due to Jose Mourinho. But do I think they're going to be title challengers? It's far too early to say that, especially with their next two or three games they've got coming up.
They've got Chelsea next, haven't they? That's a test.
I think they've got Chelsea. They've got a North London derby, which regardless of how poor Arsenal have been, it's still a North London derby. I think they've got to come to Anfield as well. After this period, if they can come out of it in good shape, then yes, then you can start talking about how the season's going to shape. But I think it's just a little bit too early for me to judge them. And another big factor as well yesterday, mate, is they lost Alderweireld, which is a big, big loss for them, because he's like another one, like a Milner type organizer, organizes a line. He went off yesterday. I'm not too sure about, is it Rodden? Is it?
Rodden.
Welsh centre back. I'm not too sure how good he's going to be. But that's definitely going to be one to look out for. With I think Jose confirmed it's going to be quite a longish injury. So that could be a problem. But yeah, 100%. So their mentality has definitely changed, mate. Definitely changed.
Yeah. I think in all fairness, you know, last season we could have said that Spurs were probably two or three injuries away from their season capitulating, i.e. Kane, Son and one other. But this season, obviously, Kane is looking sharp. Son is looking sharp. But if either of them were to get injured, they've got the depth to come in. I'm not saying that your Vinicius and your Lucas Moura's and Bergwijn are good enough, but they give you that added extra. They give you that depth. The only thing is, as you mentioned defensively, if Alderweireld is a long-term one, obviously that's a problem. But we mentioned Højbjerg. He has been undoubtedly probably their signing of the summer, one of the signings of the summer. You know, him and Jota obviously are the standout players. If he were to get injured, do Spurs have that steel in the middle of the park? Because we're seeing, you know, Højbjerg applauding players for making challenges. We're seeing him really, really get stuck in, you know, a proper leader. And again, aside from the clean sheets that Spurs have failed to keep over the past few years, aside from, you know, the ability to grind out results, they haven't had that leader in the team. And bang, here we go. So if anything were to happen to him, they're in trouble. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he's been an excellent signing. As I think you guys called him when we done the show before the season started. I think a couple of the boys on the show were saying he's going to be one of the top signings alongside Doucouré of Everton.
Everton, yeah.
And they've actually proved to be that so far with the nine games gone. He's just, you know what it is, mate? He's just a disciplined player. 7-8 out of 10 every week, isn't he? Just sticks in that role, looks after the defence. He's been, and for £15 million, mate, he's been an outstanding signing so far. But as you said, you know, with Tottenham, that if they did lose them players, they have got players to come in. But what impact they will have, I'm not too sure. I don't think it will be anything special. I might be wrong, but that's just my opinion. I don't think players, if Kane was to get injured again, which, you know, let's be honest, Kane has been injured for the last five seasons. He's suffered one serious injury, hasn't he? Which has kept him out for a good two or three months. So, if he, you know, hopefully for Spurs, they can keep him fit. That would be a massive bonus for them. But if he's out, then, you know, who do you look at? If he's out, you look at Son. But even him, even last year, Sonny struggled without Kane, didn't he? When Kane got injured, so
he can play up front, he can play on the left. So that's where I know you can't rely on that kind of player because you'll probably get injured as well. But that's something they've got to keep an eye on, got to manage, because if you lose Harry Kane for 2 months, it just railroads the season, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean, Rod. I know Stel's saying that they've got some sort of backup there, more than last year, 100%. Vinicius, I don't know much about him, but he looks like he can be a big, strong target man.
He looks very, very good.
In the Europa League, he looked quite decent when I see him come on. Obviously, Gareth Bale, as you said, he's never going to be the Gareth Bale of seven seasons ago. The Premier League, first of all, has got faster and stronger. And he's got older. So, you know, he's going to have to be managed. It was very telling. Was he on the bench yesterday? I think he was on the bench. It was very telling that Jose didn't bring him on.
Well, he played a full 90 for Wales first
for
game.
For Wales, exactly.
For the second game. So
that's what I'm saying.
I was surprised he didn't play him.
Yeah, I just think that it's like what you said, Rod, that teams like Spurs have to manage them players now. You know, Tottenham, they play Thursday again this weekend, don't they? Thursday this week, and then they play Chelsea on Sunday. So I could see a lot of players being rested in the Europa League game on Thursday, or a lot of the first team players, and then they should be fresh for the Chelsea game next week.
That's right. Well, look, let's quickly talk about City, because we haven't mentioned them, to be fair. Guardiola signed a new 2-year contract, but it's much of the same for him, isn't it? I know that they had the goal disallowed for Laporte's goal for a handball. Well, let's not go into the handball decisions this weekend because it's a fucking farce, isn't it, honestly? But him signing a new contract came as a bit of a surprise to me, but at the same time, boys, it isn't really worth the paper that the signature is written on, is it, contracts these days? I still am adamant he won't be there next season.
Do you not think that Messi's inbound in the summer now?
Nah.
You just said it, Rod. I do too. I think that's why I signed it.
Messi for City. How old is he going to be next season?
33. Mm-hmm. 32, 33. Mm. I'm with Rod there. His contract's
up in the summer, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I
especially
think
the way Rod's it ended, right. The way it ended as well, the way they wanted to leave and they told him to fuck off. They said all the shit that he's done for him, he's probably got a bee in his bonnet. Think right, okay, I'll keep it stum. I'll be professional. End the season. Yeah, I'm off.
I can see that happening as well. I don't get me wrong. I'll be gutted because I love that player. I don't want him to go to City. It's going to break my heart, man. But
here's one for you. So next year, Messi at City and Ronaldo back at United. Don't you see that?
Oh, that'd be fantastic. It's written. You're
getting all nostalgic. Okay. This is FIFA career mode now, right?
I couldn't see Ronaldo and his family living in Manchester with this weather. Mind you, Juventus is minging weather. It's not great there, is it? Yeah.
I think he's going to go back home, man. I think he's going to probably go back to Sporting Lisbon.
Miami or America, somewhere like that.
Nah, I think he's done, isn't he? He's done with us.
Here's one for you, Stel. As you mentioned, how about next year, Messi at City, Ronaldo at United, and Mbappe at Liverpool, man? How about that one?
Stranger things have happened, mate. Stranger things. LeBron James at Liverpool's got more chance at the moment. blimey. All right.
You can only dream.
Yeah, well, you can. right, okay, next game. Which game should we go to? Let's talk about United. Let's get that one out of the other way, Rod. 1-0 win against West Brom. Controversy all over the place, really. West Brom were awarded a penalty. Referee overturned the decision. Looking at VAR. Then Bruno Fernandes scored a penalty after having to retake it because San Johnson came off his line. Performance-wise, what did you make of United? I thought they were all right, in all fairness. It wasn't a great performance, but there were enough chances to win the game out of counter. But the keeper had a fucking, you know, Zeus moment, didn't he? He turned into Brad Friedel.
Well, you know, you'd expect your keeper to save them. Martial did him a favour by, you know, he should be burying that. You know, it's a great bit of play. Which is what, 6-8 yards out? He should be scoring. So, and then, you know, with 15, 20
Rod, it's
minutes...
it's Martial you're talking about, by the way.
Yeah.
It's Martial you're talking about here. So it doesn't matter if he's six yards out or 5 yards out. It doesn't mean he's going to score it.
No, but you're saying that. He was top goalscorer for United last year. So I know he hasn't scored this year, but you'd expect him to score from there. He's probably one of the best finishers at the club. So you'd expect him to score, and then the game's different. But yeah, I think they did okay. You know, they got the result in the end, but yeah, it wasn't great, but it was a win. So it's just, you just need to move on to the next game, get out of your head and move on to the next game. So like I say, it wasn't great, but you got the 3 points.
So what did you make of West Brom's penalty that wasn't given? I've seen it plenty of times. I could see why it wasn't given, but at the same time, I can see why Bilic was really, really pissed off.
Well, yeah, as soon as you see it, you say penalty. But then when you see it in slow motion, he's got the ball and really would 2 feet jump off the ground like that and dive onto the floor. So he's made a most of it, which you would as a forward in an opposing box. But yeah, for me, it's not a penalty. Yeah, it's just not. Then again, United for me is not a penalty, but for the rules this year and the way it is, you know, he's turned his back, but you know, still for me, it's not a penalty. Them ones for me are just a joke.
Have they ended that rule change? That rule change where you can give a penalty for a shirt pull in the box? Because I haven't seen a penalty given for pulling of a shirt anymore. Do you remember when Smalling used to give away?
Probably what the most penalty, and even though it was the slightest touch, because Martial makes so much of it. You don't need to go off your feet. He's pulling you. You don't need to make that dramatic. Just stop and just go ref and make the. It's just when you make it dramatic, they just wave it away. But that's all you need is a little tug when you're going at a bit of pace, and that's all you need, and that's why they do it. But Maguire did it when the kid went past him, and he could have been pulled up for it. So defenders, they do that, and they do get away with it. So
it's just that really shirt pull on Martial was more of a penalty than the one given for handball, wasn't it? If you think about it,
yeah. So
do you think that's the reason why? Do you think that's the reason why the referee overturned West Brom's one then? Because he didn't give Martial one in the first half.
Well, you'd think not. You think he's just going up on what he sees. So no, I don't think. Don't think that they do stuff like that. If they do, it's unprofessional and it's wrong. So to answer your question, I don't think he was doing that. No, I think he was just. He's obviously seen it and he didn't realise that he touched the ball. And then obviously you can see it in slow mo. He's quite clearly touched the ball. He's only clipped it, but. And he's not hit the players enough contact to make the jump like he did. He literally stopped in the air. Both feet come off the air and he's on the ground. So, yeah. Both of them were penalties, to be honest. But we got away with it.
Fair enough. Andy, come on, give us your hot take on the penalty that wasn't given to West Brom.
Do you know what, mate? The less I say about David Coote, the better it will be for the show, if I'm being honest.
No. You've opened up that can of worms now. You've opened it and there are worms everywhere.
I think the man is a disgrace, mate. I think he's I've heard of cheating before, but I've never seen it so obvious with this referee. He's an absolute shocking referee, David Coote. And it's not just about the Everton game versus Liverpool. This guy generally has just given the most shocking decisions over the last couple of seasons. I respect Rod's opinion. I personally thought it was a penalty. I personally thought Man United was a penalty because of the law change, because exactly the same one was given for Joe Gomez when KDB crossed the ball in a couple of weeks ago. So you've got to give that. It's the letter of the law, isn't it? It's a stupid law, but to give that penalty, then go to the screen. You know, I don't agree. I think Bruno did touch the ball, but he's gone through the player to touch the ball. So he's gone shin to shin. It was shin to shin for me, Rod. Although he's touched it.
The way he's
acted, I completely agree. In fact, I think he probably didn't do himself any favours by going down like that. But I still believe anywhere else on the pitch, that's a foul. Shin to shin is a foul for me. Although he touches the ball, it doesn't matter. It's still a foul. But regardless, he's given the penalty, and then he's walked across. Didn't really look at it that much. You said you watched it a few times to come to that conclusion. He wasn't even there that long on the screen. So I don't know. For me personally, this guy, he was pulled off the Liverpool game today. Surprisingly, I don't know why. I don't know whether Liverpool requested that, but he was pulled off the Liverpool game. He was supposed to be doing the Liverpool game today. And that, for some reason, I think Gary Neville tweeted about it, and I think Jamie Carragher and him were having a bit of banter about it last night. But that was a bit strange for me still. And it just shows that we've definitely made a complaint about him as a referee. And I'm going to say it, man. The guy's a self-proclaimed Man United fan. So why is he reffing Man United matches? I don't understand. I really don't understand how refs who, you know, on his Facebook page, he's standing at Old Trafford in the profile picture. It's not photoshopped. That is his profile picture. You know, I don't understand. You know, we used to have a bit of jokes about Howard Webb and, you know, he was friends with Fergie and all that stuff. But that was never, you know, this is fucking proof, mate, that he's a self-proclaimed. Why? I just want to know why Manchester United supporters are allowed to. I thought that was against, because I think Mike Dean, the Tranmere?
Tranmere, yeah.
He hardly does Liverpool matches, by the way. I think because of something to do with the area. Or
yeah, you've got to be within a
like
certain
that.
Radius. You can't.
What, you know, David Koo is, you know, for me, the decisions he's made. This is a guy that fought Pickford's challenge on Van Dijk was fine. You know, this is a guy that ruled off, a last minute offside against Henderson in the Merseyside derby. I know I keep going back to Liverpool here, but it's not just that match. Last year, he's been involved in four major incidents as a referee when he's done Liverpool matches. Do you remember the Firmino goal against Aston Villa last year?
Yes.
When they done the funky line, the diagonal line. David Koo was the VAR fucking official for that. It becomes a bit obvious for me still. You know, we've spoken about it before as well in terms of, you know, you also believe it. You believe that there's some refs that are on the fucking tape.
100%. You know, that's my honest opinion.
This guy, for me, he's just a blatant cheat. And he should be nowhere near Man United games for starters. You know what I mean? And yesterday, I felt it was a penalty to West Brom. I thought they were hard done by there, especially to overturn a decision. But the Man United penalty was a penalty as well, because that's the letter of the law. I think the only good decision he got fucking right was the retake of the penalty. I mean, the goalkeeper, he done a Jersey doodick there, didn't he? Imagine if that technology was about in 2005 for the Champions League final. I think Milan would have had every single penalty retaken.
Oh, mate, honestly,
he was on the edge of the 6-yard box jersey when he was saving them pens. I remember Pirlo's one. He literally dived on the edge of the 6-yard box. So you know that decision there for the retake was. I was watching it with my son, and the minute he saved it, my son's actually shouted, "Dad, he's about 3 yards off his line." So it was inevitable. But seriously, guys. Just quickly on the penalties, man. These Bruno penalties, man. He's got to stop doing them, man. They're absolutely terrible, boys.
Yeah.
He's missed like two or three of them now, hasn't he? Doing that stance. But when he wellies them, you know they're proper. But I hate them penalties, man. I really hate them penalties. I'm so happy we don't have any players like that take penalties like that for us, because I'll be going mental. You lot must feel it's for 50-50 with the way he runs up and takes a penalty like that.
Well, if you saw the penalties that we took before Bruno Fernandes turned up at United with Rashford and Martial, it was like 25% chance of scoring, mate.
That's a fair comment. But no, in terms of Koo, I can see him being demoted very, very soon, because his decisions are just shocking, mate. They're just shocking. Terrible. He's a terrible ref. He's the worst in the league. He's the worst in the league by far.
No Christmas cards for him from you then?
Oh, I can't stand him, mate. His face just annoys me, man.
Oh, mate. Sorry. Mate. That's mean. That's mean. Poor bloke.
It's just one of them. You know what, still, just quickly on referees, yeah? Do you remember, is it Dermot Gallagher?
Yes.
Is it Dermot? You know Dermot Gallagher, yeah. The guy that does the Sky Sports ref watch.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know about you, but when he was a ref, I couldn't stand him either. Yeah. Yep. I actually couldn't stand him. Anyway, you know, down my area, just a quick story. You know, down my area where I live in Oakwood, you know, we've got Trent Park Goals there.
Oh yeah.
The owner of Trent Park Goals, well, the guy that works, the manager of Trent Park Goals, it's Dermot Gallagher's son.
No.
I swear. Right. And we were having a conversation a few months back, and he's like, my dad's a famous referee. And I was like, oh, really? Who's your dad? And, mate, I don't know why I come out and said this straight away. I didn't have no, it just come out straight as soon as he said it. He goes, well, my dad was Dermot Gallagher. I went, I fucking hated him when he was a referee. And his face, mate, he just, the way he looked at me, I said, Yeah, I was like, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean it to come out like that, but your dad was one of these refs that I really didn't like back in the day. So
I thought
I'd drop that little referee story in for you,
poor
mate.
Poor bloke. Are you allowed to go back to that place, by the way?
Yeah.
He let you back in.
I'll give him a lot of money. He can't get rid of me.
There you go. So. Wonderful. All right, next games. West Ham beat Sheffield United 1-0. Brighton beat Aston Villa 2-1, which killed Rodri's coupon, didn't it, Rod? Yeah. Everton. They beat Fulham 3-2, and Calvert-Lewin scored twice. Who else but Dominic Calvert-Lewin? But I think it's been quite a massive coincidence that Everton played such better football that Richarlison is now back. Caesar? I think Caesar's an Everton fan, Rod.
you know what he does? He walks past the mirror and he sees himself and just starts barking at himself in the mirror. That's what he's doing. So he just caught himself in the mirror. He's like that, fucking, as if he's going to have a fight, and he's barking himself in the mirror. Fantastic.
Like when Andy sees that referee, Coot, right? So come on, Richarlison, he makes a big difference, Everton, doesn't he, Rod?
Yeah, well, you know, he's a Ballon d'Or player, isn't he? Well, the stats tell you that for Everton anyway. When he plays, he wins. So it's obviously a good omen to have, and he obviously makes him a better team. So, like I say, with the stats, when he plays, they do well. So hopefully, they keep him fit and they keep him from getting sent off or doing something daft, because he's got one of them daft streaks in him, isn't he? So he loses his head. If he gets his head screwed on, he could be a good player, but you know, he's got a top manager that can get the best out of him. So hopefully the Everton fans can, the manager can get the best out of him, because like I say, he's a top player. Calvert-Lewin banging him in like he is, you've always got a chance.
Yeah. Well, what's happened to Calvert-Lewin all of a sudden? Because I know last season he wasn't as prolific as what he is now. I'm not saying he had a bad season last year. In fact, he was very good last season. But it's almost as if he's stepped up another level this season.
You've got better players around him. Yeah, you're probably getting the balls that he wants earlier crossing. Or I don't know. They've probably worked in the training ground and using his height, using his leap, using his pace, you know, and it's paying off. So, yeah, it's hard work. He's obviously, you know, he's come from lower league. And it's paying off for him, and good luck to him.
Okay. And Andy, Sheffield United, another loss, this time against West Ham. Things must be really bad when you're losing at home to West Ham. I know Steve was on the show a few weeks ago and he was saying how Sheffield United are really suffering because without any fans at Bramall Lane, and obviously they're like the 12th man, but are we going to give them a pass because of a great season last season and say, well, yeah, maybe the fans not being there is making an impact? But then again, the same applies to every team, and apart from United, whose home form has been pretty shit, I don't see any other team really struggling at home.
Yeah, mate, I'm a bit gutted, to be fair, because I like Chris Wilder. I like the work ethic that he instilled in that Sheffield United team last year. The fans are definitely playing a big part of their performances in terms of, you know, getting over the line in some games. And they have been unlucky in some games, to be fair still. You know, I thought they played very well at Liverpool earlier on in the season. But we beat them 2-1. I thought if they had got a draw in that game, it would have been deserved. They played quite well. And there's been other games like that as well. Even today, Caesar, even today, I felt they should have scored the chances that they had. Some real easy chances, man. Ollie McBurnie, especially to equalise. You know, he's through it on goal and he's just smashed the ball. You don't need to hit the ball that hard. You know what I mean? And that's what I think the problem is now. They've now gone into a little bit of a panic mode, haven't they, in front of goal, where they were quite clinical last year, them strikers. And Rhian Brewster is going to be... I like Rhian Brewster. I think Klopp would have liked to have kept him, but obviously he knows he needed to go out and get games. And I think he can help them this year. But the problem is, he's got to be, he can't be playing on the bench. You've got to start him in games and give him a run of games. You know, you spoke earlier on about Dominic Calvert-Lewin, what the difference is. The difference is, mate, he's got a run of games under his belt and he's getting more experience and more confidence. And Rian Brewster, I think, if Wilder, you know, puts him in that side, he's a young striker. He's quite prolific in front of goal. He proved that at Swansea last year in a championship. And I know this is the Premier League and it's a step up, but you can only, you know, see how good he is when you play him, you know. And they paid quite a bit of money for him. I think 24 million quid they paid for him. So that he needs to start, you know, playing more and more games.
Andy, do you think he's starting to regret going there? Because he was fantastic at Swansea last season. I know that being at Liverpool is difficult, especially, you know, a youngster when you've got players like Origi and all these other players ahead of you.
Yeah.
But at the same time... Yeah. Come on, I don't think Sheffield United is the right club for him because of the system that they play. You know, he needs needs freedom and he's not even getting games. Yeah. So how can we even say that he's not getting the freedom there?
Exactly. And this is what I was saying to you. You know, I find it baffling that he's starting on the bench. You know, you've paid that money, which must be a lot of money for a team like Sheffield United. Is he their record signing? I'm not too sure.
I'll find out.
He's got to be close still, you know, 24 odd million quid. But you know, I agree with you. I found it a bit strange that he went there. And then I thought to myself, well, last year, you know, there was a couple of times, well, quite a few times where they put a lot of crosses in the box, don't they? Sheffield United, you know, for Ollie McBurnie and Billy Sharp and players like that. And one good thing about Rian Brewster, he's like an old school fox in a box striker. If it drops to him in them areas, I felt, you know, he could do really well there. But for some reason, they're not even playing that way at the moment. It's very strange what's going on there with Sheffield United. You know, you asked the question earlier about should we give Chris Wilder a free pass? I think he's got to just be given a little bit of time to settle the team down again and get him going back to basics of what, you know, what they had last year was, you know, they were a proper team, weren't they? You know, old school, you know, flying into tackles, getting in your face, you know, and I think they're lacking that. And the crowd is definitely playing a part for that because they used to really, you know, push them on to do things like that. So I think with Chris Wilder, who I really like, and like I said, I'm actually gutted. Sheffield United are in this pickle at the moment, and I really hope they can get out of it. But I still believe there are teams worse than them, and they will survive. But they really need to start now hitting the ground running, don't they? Still, and getting some points on the board, because once they get in a rut, you know what it's like in the Premier League, mate. It's unforgiving.
Andy, it's one point from nine games, though, man.
Yeah,
it's one
point.
And
last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, a win here and there, a draw here. It's one point out of a possible 27.
It is actually shocking. It is actually shocking. And, you know, if he was to get fired tomorrow still, you wouldn't be surprised, would you?
No.
You know, with the way things happen with owners and stuff like that. I'd be sad if it had to happen to him. But I don't know, man. I think he really... Listen, the next game for them is massive. They've got West Bromwich Albion. That for me, that is a must win. I actually believe... I don't want to jump the gun here, but if he doesn't get a result against West Bromwich Albion, I think it could be curtains for him, man. I hate to say it, but I really think it could be curtains for him.
Well, if West Brom play the same way like they did at Old Trafford, then Sheffield United are in trouble.
Yeah, and against Spurs. West Brom were decent against Spurs as well, weren't they?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying to you. They go into that game and it is now a must-win game, isn't it? Yeah. It's actually a must-win game for them now. And I really think that if he doesn't get a result there, I can see him being in a bit of trouble still.
Well, Andy, Burnley play Palace tomorrow. Right, Burnley play Palace tomorrow, and according to the table, let's have a look in front of me. Burnley are on 2 points, Sheffield United are on 1 point. Burnley win this, they go 17th. So they'll go clear of Sheffield United, and then obviously West Brom and Fulham will be stuck in the relegation zone. So, again, Sheffield United are having to rely on other teams as well. It's not just they've got it all to do for themselves. They need snookers, so to speak, you know?
Definitely, mate. Listen, it's definitely a poor return, because you're not talking about just this season. We're talking about, I think their last win was when they spanked Chelsea 3-0 at Bramall Lane. That was actually their last win in lockdown. They haven't won since that game. And that game, they was outstanding, if you remember, in that match. That was the Sheffield United that we've known this season. But you know, even today, man, I felt for Chris Wilder, because they had some good chances in the game where, at critical moments as well, still, where they could have, you know, West Ham were not brilliant today. West Ham are actually doing what Sheffield United were doing last year.
Yep.
They've gone back to basics, you know, defending really well, you know, in your face. You know, it was that sort of performance today. But I felt today was a game that he really needed to win, Chris Wilder. Mm. He really needed to get the points there today, and they failed, man. And I think he could be in trouble.
But I think it's a crazy role reversal, in the sense that, you know, Sheffield United have kind of suffered without fans at Bramall Lane, and West Ham have thrived without fans at all, because these fans are getting on David Moyes. Yeah, exactly. And they're playing their football. Mate. Yeah.
No pressure. Oi, oh, shit you, mate.
No gold, no Sullivan out.
You know, and that plays a big part, man. That plays a big part. And, you know, like, you know, talking about, you know, the West Ham performance today, like I said to you, it's like you said, roles reversed. It's almost like they're doing the basics well now, aren't they? And defending well, you know, and getting really, really good results this season, West Ham. You know, I think that the result at White Hart Lane was outstanding, and that's given them the confidence to go on and get some results now. So, you know, they're going to be they'll get better as well, because I think they've got good players, West Ham. I really like Declan Rice still. I can see a big bid going in for him from a big side very, very soon. I think he's such a good player, mate. I really do. I think he reads the game fantastically well. He's actually a good footballer as well, man. He's not just, you know, someone that steams into tackles, and, you know, he can actually play football as well, Declan Rice. Got lovely passing vision. He's got long-range passing, short-range passing. I can see a big club going in for him very soon, man.
Yeah,
definitely.
Rod, what would you rather see? 20,000 Sean Beans or 20,000 Danny Dyers?
What do you mean?
Well, Sean Bean is a Sheffield United fan and Danny Dyer's a West Ham fan.
Yeah, no, just one any more than one Danny Dyer would be fucking annoying.
Shut up, you cunts! You cunts! Let's fucking have you!
Back off, you fucking headbutt him, fuck off.
That's why they're playing well still.
That's going on the highlight reel, ladies and gentlemen.
Sean Bean. Well, Sean Bean's
he was in James Bond, wasn't he?
He's under the king, so yeah, that's all.
He scares me, that guy, man. I don't know why.
Yeah, Danny Dyer. You know, he's on those. Imagine 20,000 Danny Dyers.
That's what I'm saying. That's why West Ham have been suffering, because I've got fans, 20,000 Danny Dyers in the stadium.
But they're all throwing the tickets and the dough at the porno brothers.
Loads of money.
I reckon Sean Bean will beat up Danny Dyer though.
Oh yeah, I reckon Danny Dyer is an absolute pussy. I'm telling you, you know, we're doing all them documentaries about Aardman, but I bet he's a right pussy. I'll tell you a story about him, but
Tell me afterwards.
Yeah,
I'm staying online for that.
I spent 2 minutes in a cell in South Africa. Get out, you cunts. Yeah, right.
Anyway, yeah, but that's why West Ham are doing all right, man.
There you go. See, right, next game, Newcastle against Chelsea. What would you rather have? 20,000 gazers in the stadium? So Chelsea won 2-0. It was a pretty easy victory, man. But Timo Werner, Rod, the guy can't buy a goal, can he? I feel sorry for him.
You'd expect him to score that one where he's come across it. He's just got a bit of target and he scores. Like Baggy, it's his penalties. If he would have hit it, Baggy, it's his penalties, he would have had no problem. But he tried to side foot a champion north to side. Mm. Yeah, he'll score goals in, mate. I've seen him play. I've seen enough of him now to know that, you know, he's still getting opportunities, When you don't get the chances, that's when you need to start worrying.
Mm. And Frank Lampard. Wow, they're starting to win more games and they're keeping more clean sheets. And there are people who've been on this show before to say, oh, Lampard only got the job because he's a Chelsea legend. Well, he's kind of doing well now, isn't he?
Well, it's not rocket science, is it? If you're scoring loads of goals but letting loads of goals in, you work on defence and that's what he's done. So,
there you go.
And it's working, so...
Should a certain Norwegian manager pay heed to that?
What's that?
Don't concede goals.
You have a clean sheet. That's it. Okay.
Well, you haven't bit today. I think you know my style now. Yeah. I've become too predictable. I've become one dimensional. I've become Arsenal.
He's like Trancy question. He's Frank Lampard's a top player, and he'll be a top coach. There's no doubt about that. He did well at Derby, and he'll do well at Chelsea.
Do you think Wayne Rooney will do well at Derby then?
Difficult question. Because Derby, you know, Chelsea are a top club with big dough. They just spent £250,000. Rooney's in the bargain basement. So he's got
Lampard was there last season, so a couple of years ago. That's what I'm saying.
But Lampard had Mount to pick from, players to pick from, other players that he could bring in, quality players. Have we got that now, Derby?
No, but what I'm saying is maybe in the summer, if Derby stay up, which I guess they will, maybe in the summer, Rooney will start using loan players at United.
He's got a big decision to make because I've done it before, player manager. Does he play or does he coach? Which one does he do? And he still probably wants to play as much as he can. So if he carries on playing, he won't do very well. If he can concentrate on coaching, I think he'll do very well. Can't do both.
Yeah, because I know when he was appointed coach at the club, player coach, because Philip Cocu got the job
player
and then Wayne Rooney came in.
Player coach, you can do both. Yeah. Manager is totally different. Everything comes through you. Everything. I mean, someone's late, someone's not, everything. You're the manager. You're everything. So he's got to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, going out, shagging brass or having a drink. None of that. Be concentrate. You've got to concentrate on football. And I'm sure he could do it because he loves football, but I don't think he could do both.
Yeah. Because as I was saying,
as a manager, as a coach, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can take a coaching session and just get in your car and go home. As a manager, you've got to prep, you've got to do all this. You've got to
know how to write.
Well, got clean. She's a good writer.
Okay. Yeah. She's a good investigator as well. Go give her that.
Well, that might bite her in the ass.
Never know. Something you know that I don't. But again, we're not going to discuss that.
legalities and stuff. She should have got a better lawyer.
True. Because when he got the job as a coach, I thought, he's going to be Koku's successor because that's just how it works. And I know that. People have been saying that Rosinia, I can't believe we're actually talking about Derby, but fuck it. People are saying, Rosinia is a more qualified coach than Wayne Rooney, so he should have been in line to get the head coach role. But as I said, I'm pretty sure that Wayne Rooney, when he got the job as player coach, he was immediately in line to be the next manager, much as I think that John Terry is probably going to be in line to be the next Aston Villa manager. That's my opinion.
And I think Liam Rosinia... is a great person to have by his side. And I think he'd be more than happy to be number two. I don't think he'd want... Well, he probably... If you give it him, he'd probably take it. But deep down, he's not ready yet for that kind of job. So, number two to Wayne Rooney is a perfect perfect opportunity for him, because let's not forget Derby County is still a massive club, even though they haven't got the riches of the Premier League or Chelsea. They're still a good club with a rich history. So, but you know, that Championship, it's a difficult league. It's difficult every week, Tuesday, Saturday, and you know, you've got to have a good squad and have a good players, and you've got to have someone who sticks the ball in the back of the net. Have they got that? I don't think they have.
Not sure.
He needs to, you know, out of all the people he knows and all the people he's played with, that's where he's got to speak to the managers and try and get people on loan, try and see who's there, and see that's what he needs to be doing now. See who in the Premier League is not playing. Who I can bring
Phil Jones, please.
Phil Jones would be brilliant for Derby. In the Championship, he'd do everything because he's just a mong, isn't he? But he is, though. He'd do well in the Championship.
Yeah. Okay, right.
You know, it's mad to think still that in about 5 or 6 years' time, you could, on the touchline, you could have Lampard, Gerrard, Wayne Rooney, John Terry, all battling out in the Premiership somewhere at clubs.
Probably our kid won't stay at Wales if he gets through this year. I don't think he'll stay at Wales.
Ole as well.
You know? Stephen Gerrard's the big one. He just looks the real deal. What he's done there.
Yeah, 100%. Just unbelievable. And I think it's no fluke. You've seen him in the Europa League.
Mate, you can see it. You can just see it. And you could see the certain managers that you want to play for. And Stephen Gerrard, I just want to play him because I just know he's a winner. I just know. Just certain managers that you play. Even Mourinho thing last year. You just want to play for someone like, because you just run through brick walls for him. Even though you might clash with him and have arguments with him, have burnout. But yeah, it's gone the next day and you get on with it. You're going the same way. And you just want to win. And yeah,
that's what I mean. Yeah. Like that's what I mean, Rod. It's going to be like them guys you're mentioning, Gerrards and you know Lampards and Terrys and Rooneys and all these guys. They were all winners, weren't they? So, you know, in 5-6 years' time when, you know, your Klopps are going to, you know, not be there anymore.
It's just the way he acts and the way he speaks, the way he comes into the Rangers, the discipline that he put on the players, the way he was the way on the training ground, the way he spoke to reporters. It was just the whole package with him.
You can't see it with any of them.
Yeah, Lampard. I don't see it with Lampard. Yes, Lampard's a good coach, and he has got that bit of a feel about him. But I've just seen it from day one with Gerrard.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at you know someone like Gerrard, you know, would you say that? Obviously, this will be another discussion later on in a few years' time. But would you see him being Klopp's successor straight away when Klopp decides to pack it in?
That's how well Klopp does and how well Gerrard does. Because if Klopp's not doing so great and then Gerrard's doing well, but if they're both doing well and Gerrard wants to move on, but Liverpool have still got Klopp, then what does he do?
Rod, I think he's going to come to a Premier League club before going to Liverpool. I think that's what he's going to do. He might do a year, 2 years at a Premier League club because Klopp is probably going to be at Liverpool for another 4 years.
Three years left.
I'm telling you this now, I'm going to stick my neck out.
Stephen Gerrard has a big name around Europe, so you know, an AC Milan or an Inter Milan or
you never know, innit, Rod?
I'm going to stick my neck out. I think he's going to replace Steve Bruce at Newcastle. Ooh. I think he's going to do that.
That's mad.
See, that someone, Stephen Gerrard, like a place like that would just be a total fit, but Steve Bruce is doing a great job there.
Well, let's see, because they definitely won one for the archive
in a few years.
Definitely. One more.
But if Klopp's not doing so great on his slips, and Steve Gerrard's still doing what he's doing, then he's just absolute nailed on for Liverpool, and that is a worry because, like I said, he's a top coach manager, and you can see it. Takes no shit, disciplined, but you know he's down to earth and can have a bit of banter as well. But he's all business when he's on that coach.
It will be brilliant, though, innit, to see all of them guys on the touchline battling it out with each other. you know, how they did as players.
It will be if they're all for the respectable clubs, but I don't know how they're going to do that with John Terry and Lampard. So,
yeah, that's true. Where can you see Terry taking over if he, because he's doing his coaching badges, isn't he?
Villa.
So, you know, yeah, he could be at Villa, yeah.
You know, Villa's a big, massive club. That depends on if they keep Grealish. Did he get Barkley? Did he stay on?
Mind you, what's happened recently with Carlton Cole saying what he said about John Terry, do you think teams will touch John Terry?
Why? What did he say?
Well, Carlton Cole was interviewed on Stoppage Time TV, and he basically said that when the whole incident with Anton Ferdinand happened, John Terry spoke to Carlton Cole because they knew each other from a long time, the Chelsea days. And he basically admitted to calling Anton Ferdinand that thing, like what he did. And he said it was just a moment of madness. That's why that was his explanation for saying it. So John Terry admitted to Carlton Cole. Carlton Cole said it on a podcast. And I don't know if John Terry has denied this. I haven't really been following the story since then. I don't know if John Terry's going to get his lawyers involved, the solicitors, whatever. But,
wow,
you know, Carlton Cole said that John Terry called him and they spoke about it and he freely admitted to saying...
I don't think he's a racist, John Terry, but the kind of place where he's been probably been brought up, that just kind of rolls off the tongue with his mates and stuff. So he's obviously...
Leon Knight, who obviously you know, is a friend of the show, you know, he said on numerous occasions he grew up with John Terry. They were at Senrab together, you know, back in the day with Jermaine Defoe. And he goes, John Terry isn't that kind of person.
I'm not talking about his football mates. I'm talking about So he probably had, you know what type I mean. I don't think he's racist because when I met John Terry in Manchester, he was with black lads. And so that's who he was out with. The lads from Manchester were all like mixed race and black. So, I don't think he's racist, but that thing can slip out and, you know, yes, he said it, but I don't think he's racist.
Well, it could end careers or it can just enhance people's careers. That's the scary thing.
Look at Wayne Rooney. 3 years ago, he was pissed driving the car. He'd just been given a manager's job. Things just work themselves out. People things forget gets, very, very easily.
Things just get swept under the carpet, right?
they do. Look at what's happening now with a Wales manager. He could be managing Wales in the Euros. So you don't know the ins and outs of it. Obviously, we do now because Carlton Cole said he's admitted it and he's not the type of person that's probably going to lie. But yeah, I don't think he's racist. I think it's something that he slips off his tongue because he's grown around people or hangs around people that just who are racist, and you know, he's in a position in a job that he can't be and can't say stuff like that. But obviously, you could see it when he said it.
Yeah, true.
You can lip read it.
Yeah, but to be fair, like these days, especially, I mean, there are certain things that obviously you can't say anyway, or you're not meant to say. But you know, obviously, being sexist, racist, homophobic, you know, having tendencies to touch kids. These are four things that are no-nos, and I agree with them. You know, you can't justify any of those. But if you're caught in any storm embroiled in those subjects, you're fucked. That's it. You're done.
It's assistant manager to a massive club.
I get that. And you know, why haven't they sacked him? But that's something that happened years ago, which went to court and he got found not guilty, didn't he? So,
so by the letters of the law, you know, that the clubs have got a way up that as if like just signing a Chet Evans or a whatever, yeah, even though Chet Evans was found not guilty after serving time in prison, or the other one. Look at
Lee Hughes,
the kid who's playing for West Brom now. You know, 2 years ago, he's got some for cocaine or whatever. So,
what's his name? Livermore. So you're talking about?
Yeah, Jake Livermore. So people make mistakes, and you just hope. And when if they make continue to make the same mistakes, then you think you've obviously got an issue. But when it's once, you've got to give these. I believe in giving people chances, and you know, I think it's not a hanging offence. So, even though you know, I've got a black father, I've got a black family, he's a dick for saying it, but to answer your question, I still don't think he's racist. I still know people that would say certain things, but they're not racist. It just slips out of the tongue because they've grown up. Things change. Like 30 years ago, certain people would be called coloured people.
Yeah.
And now it's mixed race. Now it's something else. Now it's something else. It's like, what? Like, Greg Sykes, if he said that 30 years ago, no one would have batted an eyelid. But now everyone's snowflakes and, you know, he's probably grew up the whole of his life saying coloured people and he's said it at the wrong time and he's ended up losing his job. So, you know, I just think he made a big mistake and he's learned from it. We haven't seen any other signs of it.
Yeah,
and you, as quite stated, Carlton Cole, Leon Knight, who are black people, who know him quite well, who said he's not racist. So, yeah.
There you go. Perception and opinions, eh? Wonderful.
It's how people take it, man. If you've got a strong owner who don't give a shit, he's the best man for the job. He's made a mistake. Come on. But you're going to get people who say, no, I don't want to go near him. You know, he's done that, he's done this to his teammates, he's done this. No, I don't want. But you other people who don't care about that. They just want him because he's a good coach and he inspires people and he's a good manager.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, one more game before we wrap it up, gents. Leeds against Arsenal, 0-0. But Leeds were like the big bad wolf when they went to see the little pigs, isn't it, Andy? They were huffing and puffing, but they couldn't blow Arsenal down. And Arsenal held on with 10 men. First of all, Pepe, what the fuck was he doing?
He's an idiot. That's just it. He's an idiot. I haven't seen it. Listen, it was nothing. It wasn't anything that was going to knock him out. But it was the movement. It was a headbutt, and it was a blatant red card. And to be fair, he's lucky that Arsenal held on because to be fair, even with 11 men, Leeds absolutely dominated Arsenal from start to finish. I think they hit the woodwork five times. Still, was it five? Four or five times.
Yeah,
they absolutely dominated Arsenal. Arsenal look like they've gone back into that and got a clue what they're doing again on the football pitch.
Mm.
Their last result was a defeat to Villa at home, 3-0. So it's not surprising that they went to Leeds and didn't perform. And they're very lucky to get a point there. I thought Leeds could have gone for Arsenal a little bit more. I thought sometimes they slowed their play down a bit too much. But they were a much better side today, and they should. They're definitely dropped 2 points today, Leeds, 100%.
Yeah. The thing is, Andy, right? And I don't want this to turn into an Arsenal bashing show because whenever they get a bad result, we always seem to get on their backs, and you know, we discuss the fans and whatnot. And you know, I've been a fan of Arteta's for a while, and you know, I saw his slow, gradual progression and how the players were, you know, buying into his methods. We saw him cast aside a couple of players that were bad influences, but yet he still isn't getting the results. A lot of the performances this season haven't been good enough. Granted, he won the FA Cup last season, so naturally that's his, you know, joker card, so to speak, or that's his get out of jail card, if you want to talk about, controversial subjects. But at the same time, Thomas Partey hasn't played the past couple of games. They've suffered. Aubameyang hasn't been scoring goals, which, you know, you'd expect him to. Since he signed that new contract, hasn't been the same player. And then you've got the
one goal. Like,
yeah, there you go. One against United and one against Fulham on the opening day. Did he score against Fulham? Or was it?
Well, no. I think he's just scored one goal.
Just one, yeah? And that was the penalty. Okay, well, there you go. I'm stand corrected. So, you know, the signings that he's made, like your Marie, I don't know what's happened to him. Gabriel's been decent. But then when you look at Willian, he hasn't really done too much.
I said it though.
It's worrying times for Arsenal, to be honest. And while I'm not one of these people, I feel that you've got to get on the manager's back straight away. You've got to give him the opportunity. I still believe that there are a lot of players at Arsenal that aren't pulling their weight. And there's only so much that a manager and his backroom staff can do. I don't know if you feel the same way, Andy. I think Arsenal have got a squad good enough to get into or even challenge for the top four. But it's almost as if these players take the easy way out. They hide behind, you know, the Ozil situation. They hide behind the Gunnosaurus story. They hide behind all these little things. And they're not standing up and being counted. And yes, it's easy to blame the manager for the tactics and the performances. But he's now doing what they wanted. They wanted Aubameyang as a central striker. There you go. Central striker today. There you go. Nothing.
Yeah. No, mate, I think you're even going a little bit too far and being kind that they can challenge top four with them players.
I'm trying to get you to talk.
I just don't think Arsenal have got a good enough team, mate. I really don't. They've got a couple of good players in their side. You know, Partey actually played in the Villa game, didn't he? The 3-0 loss.
Didn't he come off injured, though?
Well, no, he definitely played in the match. I can't remember if he came off injured, but I know that he was playing and they got absolutely battered by Aston Villa. In fact, 3-0 flattered them. It could have been 4-5-6. And same today. They could have lost 4 or 5 today to Leeds, the chances that Leeds had. I just think they've got average players in their team still. And they've got an average board, average recruitment. I mean, to spend £72 million on Nicolas Pepe for starters is criminal in itself. And I don't blame the player for that, because the player didn't ask to be bought for £72 million. He's a £20 million player, tops, Nicolas Pepe. He's an okay footballer. You know, he's not a top four quality. He's Europa quality, which is what he's done with Lille. And to go and spend that much money on that player is absolutely criminal for me. And it shows you the recruitment that is at Arsenal.
But Andy, sorry to cut you off there, Andy, but the signing of Nicolas Pepe, granted, I agree that the money that they spent was ridiculous. And I know you guys were heavily linked with him and you didn't want to pay that fee. But
we offered 19 million.
There you go. So it seems to me, and again, I'm just speculating here, but it seems to me that whoever was involved in that deal took a major cut out of it. That's 100%.
And this is what I'm saying to you. It's not just about what's on the pitch, what's going on the pitch at Arsenal. It's what's going on behind the scenes, man. They're a week run club. You know, why are you paying Aubameyang 350 grand a week? Seriously, man. I mean, come on. I know he's been scoring goals, but 350 grand a week.
But see, this is the thing. They're doing exactly what they failed to do with Alexis Sanchez. He wanted a new deal. They didn't want to give him the money. He ended up at United and they took a big hit. Okay, granted, he wasn't a success, but they felt like they probably could have got money for him, or big money, if they'd held on to him. But with Aubameyang, similar situation. They probably thought, we don't want to lose him on a free, because he's going to be available on a free in January, isn't he? He's a Bosman or whatever, so he can talk to other clubs.
Yeah.
They're probably thinking, let's get him to sign a new contract and then we can sell him on. But it's almost as if he's got that new contract and for whatever reason, right, whether it be the player, whether it be the system, whatever, it's just not working. Me personally, I believe that they shouldn't have given him what he wants, because he's held the club to ransom. And also,
exactly.
So, and this is a fact, right? Because it was actually in the media last year, because I remember reading this. I was going to do my driver's education for running a red light, but that's another story for another time. I read an article that beginning of last season, they paid him a Champions League qualification bonus despite not qualifying for the Champions League. It was in his contract that he had to get paid a certain amount of money for them qualifying for the Champions League. They didn't qualify, yet he still got paid for it. So you tell me who's making money out of this deal.
Mate, this is what I'm saying to you still. It's so much wrong at that football club. You know, and I just kept quiet when they were going, you know, when they were getting a couple of good results here and there. And, you know, Mikel Arteta, he's got our Arsenal back and all that. I've heard it so many times, man. And I've said it, and I'll say it, and I will continue to say it. You have to be a complete football club, from top to bottom, I say this because we suffered the same. Liverpool fans suffered the same when we had them two absolute muppets running our football club, Hicks and Gillette. This is what is running Arsenal Football Club right now. Absolutely don't give a shit about the football club. Don't care about the values of the team. And when you run the team badly from up top, it filters down to the football pitch, regardless of who the manager is. Yeah. And that team, I just kept my mouth shut. You know, they beat teams, you know, like Man City, and they won the FA Cup last year. And mate, there was even chat about challenging for the title this year, man.
That's a bit premature.
I ain't going to say anything, man. I ain't going to say anything because Arsenal will always end up in the same predicament, mate, unless things change behind the scenes at that football club. You know, like you said, why did they give a player 350 grand a week? You know, if someone strong is in charge of that football team, yeah, they'll turn around to that player and say, well, sorry, mate, you know, you're playing for Arsenal Football Club here. This is what we're giving you. This is what we believe you're worth, you know. 350 grand a week still, players on that money should be winning you titles, mate, or having you in contention to winning titles and challenging at every single competition that you're in. Do you know what I mean? If you look at, you know, I think Aguero's on what, 300 odd grand a week at Man City?
Yeah, but I think it's too late. Yeah, too late for 300.
All right, but he deserves that because of what he's achieved at Man City, mate. What has Aubameyang achieved at Arsenal other than scoring goals? Which
he wears masks.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He can dance.
He can dance.
He can do somersaults, and he's got a lovely media. Car. He's
got didn't you look after his car once when you were at Yanimais?
Yeah, I did. But I know what you're saying. But you know, players on that sort of money still, they deserve to be on that money when they're achieving stuff for their football teams, mate, and for their football clubs. And that is the biggest problem. And is it a surprise that he's not scoring goals again? Have you noticed his body language as well, mate? His body language since he signed that contract. I said this to a couple of Arsenal fans. They're like, nah, load of rubbish. Mate, his body language, he doesn't have that same energy anymore, that same drive. Was he playing for his contract? Now he's got it. He's happy, mate. Happy as Larry. How old is he?
Same with Ozil. Happened with Ozil, didn't it?
Yeah, mate. You know, Ozil's not even in a 25-man Premier League squad, mate. And he's on 350k a week. If that doesn't tell you there's problems or hustle behind the scenes, then I don't know what will.
But the thing is, there's been so much emphasis on Aubameyang and the amount of goals he scored. And great, listen, he's been a fantastic return on investment. We can't deny that he hasn't been a great signing for Arsenal. He's been brilliant. But the thing is, when does it end? Because you can't just rely on Aubameyang to get your goals. I'm looking at Lacazette, right, who when he joined Arsenal, they're saying, oh, he was banging goals for Lyon and, you know, 35 goals here and there. And he barely scored 10 in his debut season. I don't know how many he's got this season. In fact, I think he's actually had more mishit shots than he has goals this season, in all fairness. Where has he disappeared to? And people can say, well, you know, he's dropping deep, he's collecting the ball. Well, Firmino doesn't have that problem, you know. Yeah. And people will say, well, he's got Salah and Mane. Well,
Harry Kane don't have that problem either.
There you go. So, yeah, you know, you can't expect Aubameyang just to get you the goals. But then when you look at the rest of the team, okay, and look at Granit Xhaka and Elneny, these aren't Arsenal players. Hector Bellerin,
absolutely,
he's not,
mate,
an Arsenal player.
Absolutely.
Luis is not. And it goes on and it goes on and on and on. And there's only so much the manager can take criticism for. This is a gradual process. Now, if they want to be successful, you've got to trust this manager. As I said, he's not scared to cast players aside, but he's not responsible for selling these players. Okay, if he says, I want this guy gone, it's down to the club to decide whether they can take a hit on a player. It's down to the club to be able to sell the player, which is why Liverpool's so good, because you can sell players like Jordan Ibe and Solanke for, not just to get rid of them, but for big money. But Arsenal can't do that. And this is why Arteta cannot. And in fact, this is why no Arsenal manager can progress with this ownership. Because it's all well and good signing your Pepes and signing all these players, your Yo Pierres, your Mkhitaryans, for the social media, for all the nonsense on Twitter. But the fact is, if you can't trust the manager, believe in his morals, and also back him to sell players, not just bringing players that he wants, but to sell players that he doesn't want, you're going to fail. You can do what United are doing. Bring manager after manager and after manager.
Exactly.
But unless they have their squad, right? And people are going to say to me, well, if he's good enough, then he can work with what he's got. No, it's bullshit.
No, that doesn't work like that,
bullshit,
mate. It doesn't work like that. You know, you've hit it on the nail, mate. It's the players, you said that earlier on, you know, they can maybe challenge for a top four. I think they're lucky to challenge for a top six with that team. I would say Everton have probably got a better team than Arsenal. I'd say Wolves have got a better team than Arsenal. You know, people might come at me for saying this, but I'm not far off it. You know, Everton and Wolves have got good structured sides, good players in each position. you know, I just think we're going to struggle again this year. And until that top of the echelon gets sorted at Arsenal, then it's always going to be filtered onto the pitch. Still, their best player is a kid that's come from the academy, Saka.
Yeah.
That's their best player in the team. People will laugh at me and say, no, it's Aubameyang. Aubameyang gets the goals, but he hasn't got the goals this year since he's signed that contract. And Saka is always an 8 out of 10 footballer for that team. You know, I think he... Did he get injured tonight, I think, as well?
Yeah,
which is
so, yeah.
Big blow for him because he's such a good player, that Saka. And he's a player that I didn't go and spend 50, 60, 70 million pounds on. He's come from their academy. Yeah. And I can tell you now, Arsenal got a lot of them boys coming through like Saka. But until that problem sorted at the top, mate, we're going to be... This subject will always be happening on your show.
Yeah.
You know, they get all excited when they win a couple of games. You know, they're back. And they're not back, mate. They're not back. This Arsenal team's the shadow of a football club that it was 15 years ago, mate.
Well, Rod, let's talk about Leeds because they're on the rise, aren't they? And again, they were very unfortunate not to win the game today. I think players like Patrick Bamford have been superb. Stuart Dallas was immense today. Even Ayling, and I know Ayling had a great chance and probably should have scored. But again, Leeds attacking-wise this season, mate, they've been outstanding. I know they got battered against, was it Leicester and Crystal Palace? But these results are always going to happen, especially in 2020, the way the year has gone so far. But from an attacking perspective, Rod, surely they must be kicking themselves for not winning today.
Yeah, you know, especially with having 11 v 10 for so long. Bamford, yeah, someone else come on the show said he was going to score goals. I can't remember who it was. Who was it?
What, the...
Rodrigo.
He came from Valencia, didn't he? He had COVID, though, didn't he? So I think he's just recovered.
No, someone at the start of the season come on the show saying Bamford was going to score some goals. I can't remember.
Oh, what, KG? Was it KG?
Oh, yeah.
KG, no, it was me.
It was you.
I don't know what... I've just seen it now, what that Pepe is doing. Just an idiot, but... When you see it with Sheffield, you were talking about Sheffield United before, when these teams come up and you don't know much about them, you know, they take you by surprise, and that's what Leeds are doing right now. Same thing, and then obviously you have a year of them, and then you learn about it, and you can coach and try and play better against them. That's what you kind of seen with Sheffield United, and obviously a few things with the crowd and whatsoever. But Leeds, yeah, they just seem to be all out, just absolute Joseph bunnies from the start to the end. And yeah, they will be kicking themselves because the way they play, being at home, and like I say, with having 11 versus 10 for so long, it's probably a 2 points drop for them because, you know, they were there for the taking, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And again, with the chances that Leeds missed, they should have done a lot better. But I think you quite rightly said that, you know, these promoted teams, they can't to the Premier League and they do take teams by surprise. But we kind of expected this from Leeds anyway, didn't we? We saw how well they did last season under Bielsa. We saw how well they did the year before and they were unlucky to miss out in the playoffs. But at the same time, it isn't just the style of play. I think it's also the mentality as well, because while they folded at Palace and folded at home to Leicester City, they're not afraid to stick to their guns. They're not afraid to stick to their philosophy. Bielsa isn't going to change anything. If he's set a certain way, that's how they're going to play. And the players have bought into it, which is unlike Arsenal, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but, you know, let's give Arteta some credit. Bielsa's been there a lot longer. So you can see Arteta is slowly but surely making them better, even though, you know, he's still got bad eggs in the club. And, you know, we say this when they come in, and people forget when you say it. We said it with Solskjaer. This is a massive job, and he needs at least 3 years to turn it around. It's not a year or a year and a half or 2 years. It's a three-year job to get the players you want to bring in and get the rats out, because you only need one bad player. And if you've got a few of them, then you're just pissing against the wind. So you've got to get them all out. And by the sounds of it, he's still got a few, two or three there. The Ozil situation is not helping anyone because he's just sat there earning an absolute fortune. And he's not even in the Premier League squad. And the guy's a top, top player. So that's got to cause issues. So, but, you know, Bielsa, he's a top coach. If you look, read his book and you look into him, you know, he said something there about teams, the teams coming up. The teams coming up, the Premier League teams playing them wouldn't have known much about them, so they wouldn't have done the research on the culture and how, yes, they would have watched them play and seen, but they wouldn't have actually looked into detail because we're not playing them. So, the, you know, the Premier League's a fast season, so you've got to concentrate on the teams you're playing week in, week out. So they've probably not in detail gone into how they play and how to stop it. And that's what probably Premier League teams are starting to do now, and they'll kind of figure it out. But with, like what you said, with his intensity, and if they get better quality players, then, you know, sky's the limit for him, because he is a decent coach. And like I said, the intensity they play at and the quality they have, and if they do get better players, you know, but I could see Bamford from years ago when he was at Chelsea yeah. Goal and so. They're a joy to watch. You never get a really dull game watching Leeds. So,
Well, Rod, if you put Bielsa at Arsenal, do the results improve? Do the performances improve? Do the players improve? Because I'm seeing Arteta bringing the likes of Willock, Nelson, and Nketiah. He's not afraid to give youth a chance. Do you think Bielsa would make a massive impact at Arsenal like he did at Leeds?
No. Because going back to the point of Arsenal, they've still got bad eggs in the changing room. So you only need one not to be playing, and then that one player is whispering in everyone's ear. And it's just a cancer. And by the sounds of it, they've got a few of them there. So he's got to weed them all out. So the Aubameyang thing, the way you talk about, he seems like holding to ransom, but they've let it get to that. How do you let him get to his contract to let him get down to that? They've got that's bad business on Arsenal's point. And we've seen that year in, year out with them. So it's obviously an issue that they've got upstairs. But they've done the right thing by bringing the right coaching. It just he needs to sort it out and rattle someone heads up in the executive box and start bringing the right players and doing the right business.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that front, but when you look at, again, going back to Arsenal, right?
I think if Bielsa come into United, he would change it.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. But that's because United got more attack-minded players and better technical players.
Yeah, they've got quality, but better quality and better players, yeah.
You know? But if you look at, say, let's go back to Arsenal very quickly. If Arsenal's performances were up to scratch, but they weren't winning games, would Arteta get less flack? Because the way I see it is that it's all well and good criticising the manager and the players when the results aren't great. But if the performances mirror the results, then you could say that there's a problem. But if the performances were good and they're not winning games, then there isn't really that much of a problem. It's more about working hard, no?
It's a difficult question, that, because, you know, you've got Arsenal, a lot of Arsenal fans are idiots. So, and then you've got some Arsenal fans that are knowledgeable and know all this stuff. So it's really difficult question that, because you're in a result business. So, but, you know, a manager coming in needs to be given time. So as long as the performances are getting better, then you'd probably stick out. But that's when you have to have a strong fan base, a strong chairman or executive board. And you've all got to work in the same direction. So it's a difficult question to answer that. So.
So if they didn't win the FA Cup, would his job be under threat, do you reckon?
No. He's been there. He's been there a year, and you can see that he's improved. You can see that he's improving. And listening to Stez, he's obviously knows his stuff as well. He's a good coach, Arteta. He knows what he's doing. But like I say, he needs to get his team in. And that's going to take more than a year.
Okay. Andy, quickly.
Is he getting the players that he wants? Because Arsenal, that's, you know, they're tight. So they don't spend the money that they should be doing, that the fans that pay the money for the season tickets and pay the fortunes they do to watch Arsenal. And when they are paying money, they're not doing the research. You pay another £10 million, you get a world-beating Zaha, who's an Arsenal fan growing up. It's just a number. It's just that just someone has been absolutely had the pants pulled down and got a big suitcase of dough from Arsenal and Nigel. Because that Pepe, whoever's the chairman at Leo must have been laughing his cock off because he is wank. He's not worth 70 odd million. Not even worth 20 million. He's wank.
There you go. I'm actually going to end the show like that. I'm going to end it on that. I was going to ask Andy a question, but I don't think he can beat Rod in that respect. Actually, one more thing, Andy.
No, but the Arsenal fans, you can see why Arsenal fans get upset, and because he's wank and he's £72 million.
But that's not his fault, though.
No, it's not. But it's the people upstairs who continue to make these mistakes, continue to let people's contracts run out. What is going on? Are you running? Who's running it? What's going on? You've just seen a brand new multi-billion-dollar LA Rams stadium open this year. That's where all the dough's going.
Yeah, I said the same, Rod. The problems are up the top, mate. And with them problems up the top, it will always filter down eventually.
Let me tell you that LA Rams have got the best defense in the league. They pay big, 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 big dough. They've got the best defensive player by far. The two best by far. So they pay big dough then as well. They're paying like £20 million for one player a year. It's just big, massive dough. And that he's just like it. He's at the bottom end, but at the top end of what he does. So the team that they own, they pay top dollar, but they're not doing it at Arsenal.
Yeah, and that's what I said to Stel. They don't really care about the club. They're just rinsing it.
Same as United. They're rinsing money out, and they'll continue to do it until fans vote with their feet and just stop turning up, stop paying for teams.
Exactly.
But the thing is, the only way
it's going to happen. Even then, they might say, "Fuck it, we're still getting the Sky and BT and other money." But you know, it's a big if you've got 20,000 people to a 60,000 seat stadium.
It's not a good look, is it?
But the thing is, when you look at Leeds United, for example, you've got Radizani as the chairman. I know you got bought the club off Chiellino. Chiellino, I think that was his name. Not Chiellini, Chiellino, the other crazy Italian that I think was it the number 7 he didn't like or some shit like that. He's been probably the best chairman. One of the best chairmen in the league, and this fact that you know he's backed the manager. Leeds went through a really bad patch back in the last season, even the year before. He held on to Bielsa, he trusted him, he's backed him in the summer, bringing in players left, right, and center. He sold players that perhaps Bielsa didn't feel were adequate, Andy. And yet Leeds are still reaping the rewards. Granted, you know, it's not their second season, so they might get second season syndrome for all we know. But at the same time, given Bielsa's track record, given his reputation, given his knowledge in the game, you know, we said at the beginning of the season, Leeds will be a top 10 team. And I stick by that. I still think Leeds will be top 8, in my opinion. And if the other teams aren't careful, they'll be top 6. Do you agree with that?
Well, I remember I came on your show when you had the Leeds fan on. I can't remember who it was, what his name was. Sorry, I apologise. Yep. I turned around and I said to him, I said to you guys, they're gonna do really well this year, and it's not because of luck, because they've got really good players still, in their team. You know, really good players in their team. You know, even signing Rodrigo for £38 million. Yeah, when you think about what Arsenal have done with Pepe, are you going to tell me Rodrigo is going to do any worse than, you know, he's going to be better than Pepe in a team like that? And these are the sort of players that Leeds have got in their side. They've got hard workers, you know, who fight for their manager. But on top of that, some really good footballers, mate. So
it's no coincidence. Sorry to interrupt, Andy, but there's no coincidence. Right. no coincidence if you've got a good person under you who's bringing the players. If you watch that Tottenham documentary, there's a lad called Stitchin, who's a lad who was bringing them in. They was interviewing him. You know, the lad who was bringing the players in. Well, he was in the same age as me. He was a player. He's actually the same age at school. I played with him at Salford Boys. And he played for Man United and he went to Blackburn. And then I didn't know where he was until I seen that documentary. But he knows football. He knows the players. He knows what Jose wants and what kind of stands he wants. And they're the type of players, the type of people you need under the manager. The coach can get on with what he's doing. You get told a number of players that what you want, and they're the only standard players what you want. Anyone else is just not acceptable. And you can see that with Tottenham. Obviously, he's been there 2 years, and you can see it's reaping rewards. But I'm going to go back to the slagging the Arsenal off. United are the same. They're with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're paying top dollar as well. Gronk, Tom Brady, Antonio Brown, Chris Evans, Chris Goodwin. These are the top players. So these owners are rinsing the top Premier League clubs and just rinsing them, absolute rinsing, tens of 20s of million pounds. And it's just going to a different country and it's not going straight into the football, back into the football. It's just not. At United, it's been happening now for like 15 years.
Absolutely bang on, mate.
Yeah. So I can't really just mention Arsenal. It's United as well, just as bad.
No, mate, I said it before. As a Liverpool fan, I've been through, as a fan, what Arsenal have. Rod, our ex-American owners tried to sell Melwood, man.
They were more like crooks, weren't they? People involved with Arsenal, United, businessmen, they were more like crooks, weren't they?
Yeah, I know. But what my point is that they were so bad at running our football club that we were struggling on the pitch. And that's what I can see happening at Arsenal because of what's happening up the top. And like you said, mate, they don't care about the club. They're rinsing, you know, Arsenal are a massive global team. Man United are the biggest out there. Why would they want to sell the club when they're making so much money off them? It's just a no-brainer for them to keep the clubs, is it? You know, so... No.
The only managers with a perfect job is Lampard and Ole, because they just give him multiple pounds money. They could just give him millions and millions of pounds. Arteta's not been given loads of money. Klopp's not been given loads of money. People say, oh, well, Van Dijk, but they earned that from Coutinho.
Yeah,
they haven't spent massive amounts. They haven't spent massive amounts of money either. Tottenham, they haven't spent massive amounts of money. But United, Chelsea, at Chelsea, City, and United, they spent hundreds of millions of pounds. So, they're the three teams that should be at the top of the league, and they're not.
Bang on. I totally agree, mate. I totally agree.
Excellent. Let's end it on that, gentlemen.
End with Pepe's wank.
Pepe's wank.
Can I do the salute?
Honestly. Oh, Jesus. Right. Twitter handles. Andy.
I don't even know.
You got another one? Fuck's sake, doesn't it? Rod?
yeah, don't worry about it. I'll be suspended again soon.
You'll be suspended soon. There you go. Wonderful. Right, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back sometime very soon, probably next week or something like that. Take care.